mind is like a river, maybe deep or shallow, and the view is like a valley, maybe wide or narrow. In this life that brings me here, it's my quest to live it without fear, and to find the answers to some questions and carry on. I guess it's just my nature to reach for something.
That's Les McCann with Let Your Learning Be Your Eyes. It's from his 1975 album, Hustle to Survive. I'm getting lots of reverb for some reason. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking. We're continuing to talk and trying to decipher what's going on and how it's going to involve us. The election seems to be going to hell, and we are in the handbasket. That's what it looks like to me. We have, I mean, how much further into the depths, into the swill, is this going to go? And we shouldn't be sitting around waiting and observing. We should be planning. We should be coming to a point of reckoning with the system, and more so in devising some way that we control ourselves that is a much healthier, much more effective alternative than this crazy situation that we have. We can't ignore it, because it's important to always keep tabs on what is being planned for you. But in the end, you got to have your own plan. And it's so clear. Everything has been pointing to the need for a comprehensive alternative plan. And in the big sense, meaning in the sense of a full-fledged organizational plan that encompasses as many people as would join it, but we have to have a mini version plan, a plan that's our own. You see what's happening. You better get ready. Because if you give up right now, if you yield to this, it's inevitable what's going to happen. And you have to have a fallback position. You've got to. So that's the work we have to do. I've talked enough. I talked all day yesterday. I literally hogged the airtime. I couldn't believe it when I looked at the clock and it was time to say goodbye. So I'm making up for it today. Good manners dictates that I do that. At 888-874-4888. I really like the idea of providing space for you to express your views. But I want us to be purposeful in expressing our views, really sharing ideas. What is your gut feeling about where we are? Which is one thing. But we shouldn't be stuck there. What is an idea that might work? What is the future and the role of progressive politics and independent movements at this time? Do you have any faith that they would actually provide us an answer, give us a place to go? Because politically, we will need a place to go. Individual action is one thing, but as you know, politics makes greater sense when you have a whole bunch of people who are like-minded moving in the same direction. And we need something more than ever as a buffer against the insanity, as a counter to it. It is only going to get worse. And I don't mean to sound so pessimistic. I don't mean to sound alarmist in any way. It's just how I see the situation. So you have to begin the process of saying, okay, I've deferred this long enough. I've delayed this long enough. But the time has absolutely come for me to get a hold of my own responsibility and my own contribution to this phase that we're in so that we can forge something different. It is not going to be perfect. As you can see, none of the candidates are perfect. And that's a given. Nobody is going to be perfect. But what we are seeing really is that because these people are who they are, they bring who they are to what they do. And it's not good. There's very little encouraging news to report. These folks are unstable. They are narcissistic beyond belief. But they are part of systems that are predatory, that are not pro-human. They are heartless, but we've got to get to the task of doing realistic assessments of where we are and what is possible, what might work as an alternative in the large sense in which we pool our power and resources, but also in the small sense of what individually we have to do to grow politically. From Wisconsin, Habu, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Ms. Lead. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for calling.
You're most welcome. Before I embark on what I see, which is, I'll tell you ahead of time, is myopic, I want to really congratulate you for your stentorian session yesterday.
Did you use the word stentorian in connection with me?
Even though you didn't raise the timbre of your voice, but indeed it was incisive, it was trenchant, and it hit the nail right on the head. So this is the kind of analysis that is useful, and of course I know you don't want people to stop there, but to be to go ahead and be proactive and seek out a course. You know, now back to the issue at hand. I have to say that both parties, as you've well articulated, are not in the interest of the people, even though we call this such a thing as democracy of, by, and for the people. It isn't the case here. And the only way I see out, although I don't think Americans will let go, because they're so in love with this form of government, not because it serves them, but because of the whole, because of the cachet, American democracy, the Constitution, et cetera, and none of which really provide safeguards to the people. Especially the Bill of Rights is meant to provide safeguards to the people from the government, from the excesses of government. It doesn't do that at all anymore, except perhaps for the Second Amendment. Not that that's the only thing I can rail about, but various issues are not. And the way I think forward, if we can ever get past that inertia, is to kind of go to a Swiss style system, where the lawmakers there are incidental. Major issues are decided by the people in referenda. Uh-huh. But I don't think we would move away from the system, because it is too profitable to the decision makers, the lobbyists, the corporations. So this entrenched 2 or 3%, will not let go of this. But I think this kind of system would be more useful to the people.
Well, that's on an organizational or the macro level. What about the micro level?
You know, as I said, I'm too myopic to see past past.
Well,
wave.
Let me put it this way then: in your own day-to-day life, how do you see yourself equipping yourself to deal with what you see, what you clearly have seen as the onslaught ahead, and the contradictions we have to deal with now? What is your orientation going to be as a person? You're one individual, you have one unit, let's say, of power. How do you envision that unit of power? Do you envision yourself as having power at all?
You know, the sad answer is I've disengaged. As I mentioned once before when I called, I had not voted in 8 years. Seeing how corrupt the system is, meaning these people, I shouldn't say corrupt as much as we do not matter. You know, after we do the heavy lifting, to use your analogy yesterday, you know, we are discarded. So you know, disengaged. And I think many people have that mindset. In the last federal elections, which was between the presidential, there was a 37% or 35% showing. So now elections are not the end all and be all of political activity. I do talk to people, and even there I see a lot of inertia, or people who are probably just tuned out, but in another way, not the same way. So we are not of congruent minds. So you know, to me, it is quite a maze to kind of try and bring this all together. And you probably are thinking you're a defeatist. Perhaps I am when I size this problem. But if there was something that looked like it would yield results, and I'm not talking about big results. I'm talking even, you know, a difference. I would go along with it. And let me just say this. I do expect to vote in this election for Trump, not because I have any inkling towards him, but that he's dared challenge the establishment. One thing he did that was very good was he kind of publicly questioned the legacy of the war, the invasion of Iraq. Our mainstream media, the academy, the intelligentsia never did that publicly. And so for that, he deserves at least some recognition.
Well, thank you. Very, very, very profound thoughts today that started off the program. Thank you so much, Habu, for calling in.
I'm sorry I came short, but thank you very much for the courtesy.
No, there's no such thing. No such thing. We are talking we're speaking our minds, and it requires us to, you've been very brave, let me put it this way, and I'm amazed by this all the time by callers who let us into the most intimate part of themselves, which is what they're thinking. So I always say it's such a marvelous thing that people can do that and still not think that, you know, they've done enough. But you've done quite a bit by putting your thoughts out there and allowing us to hear what your thinking is. Thanks so much.
Yeah,
from San Francisco, Jesse, you're on the air.
Hi, Yuxi. Thank you for taking my call. And yes, yesterday's talk was just wonderful and amazing and inspiring. I would say what you are doing is one example. That is talking as much as one can talk. That is, I would say, the method of, you know, one of the key methods of change. Another one is using our physical bodies. Another one is our thoughts and perhaps our prayers or meditation, so to speak. So when I'm going at the cash out section, I have been asking folks, what do you think of the election? And using that as a vehicle, I talk to my close friends and family about it, and am willing to get into intense debates. And that is just the road I've chosen. I think some people, you know, it's not always comfortable. Often people don't want to hear about it, but it's teaching me how to deal with the pushback from folks, and how do I find the best argumentative strategies. In terms of livelihood, that's also important to me, so I try to find a way of working that, in a sense, works towards these solutions. And on a spiritual level, you know, in a sense, in the Bible, I'm not particularly of the Bible, but I think there's things in there that also speak to me. One of the lines I've been thinking about, you know, though I may walk through the valley of death, well, in a certain sense, you know, we are spirits that have come down to this valley of death to not fear the evil, and, you know, that is the challenge that we're in. So if that is an ultimate truth somehow, maybe we're just here to work it out through that. And in a sense, yes, we need to be both attached and unattached. So attached perhaps to the outcome to a certain degree, but not too attached. So we need to strive for peace and justice.
Do you feel that the political system is at a point where it is almost beyond redemption? Or do you believe that there is still value in having this political system? And could you also talk about how that very fact shapes your individual sense of your individual political power?
Yeah, it's kind of a conundrum. I feel both ways. Sometimes I feel this is totally bankrupt. Actually, we don't even know the depths of the bankrupt. I mean, I'm looking into the deep state, which is essentially, you know, I believe that they killed Kennedy. It was Alan Dulles. You look at the books that are out now, the talks that Gary Knoll had on several weeks ago with the lawyer, there's four talks that are just absolutely mind-blowing. I'm trying to remember the name of the lawyer, but he goes into essentially the rise of the robber barons took over our government, and that's how it is to this day. And actually, at this point, it is so corrupt that it has corrupted the average citizen's mind, probably at least since the entire 20th century. And really goes back even further. And we are vulnerable to this corruption because of the history and the nature of how this country was formed through genocides, two different genocides. So there's a lot of easy denial that can happen to this system. So I don't think the system so much is going to change. I actually am, on the other hand, a little resigned that this is just the way it is, and maybe has always been. And it's just that we're actually discovering more and more the depths of it through the information age. And so given that, you know, what do we do? I would say that we talk about that aspect of it. We talk about the deep state, that essentially this is a coup banana republic. I don't think a banana republic is really exactly describing the whole thing, but it is not a real democracy. I think Bernie won the primary, but the system is so rigged that they can just manipulate it, you know, seven ways to heaven. And the real problem is that we are on a mass level being psychologically manipulated, and that's the part that just blows my mind. Through the media, you can look at Operation Mockingbird, that this was actually a program with documents. And yet, when we look at the news, I myself, you know, even though I knew this would happen with Obama, I would stand up and cry at his words. And yet, another part of me, you know, they talk about cognitive dissonance. We kind of know that this is the case, and then people give into it. They kind of want to segment that part of their understanding. So the problem is, are the citizenry, and how do you break that? That is a, you know, I think pointing out the false flags through science is a key aspect, because that's when you can get someone to go, whoa, oh, that, I didn't expect that, you know, do I go with the Newton's third law, or do I go with the official story? And maybe that can break people's mindset and being attached to one party or the other, So that's kind of been my, that's been my strategy, along with, on an environmental level, we need to protect the earth. So I think we need to be promoting renewable energies and so forth. So that's interesting with Clinton, because even though she's a total, you know, she's the latest face of the deep state, she has some response, at least on the surface of a platform, to the people through a strong renewable energy program. She's also been one of the main proponents of fossil fuels through fracking around the world, so, you know, I don't trust her at all, but at least that seems that she's being swayed by the needs of the planet to a certain degree. So those are just, you know, off the top of my head, a few things.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
It sounds like you're evolving, and that you're trying to make sense of the interplay between what we know as politics, the political system, and what independently you have come to realize about that system, which is the development of your, the beginning of the development of your own individual politics. And this, the next step is, how do you manage the two without going
I'll work on that.
Thank you. Thanks for calling sharing with that.
Okay.
Daoud from New York, you're on the air. Hello, Daoud, are you there?
Hello?
Oh. Yes, Daoud, how are you?
How are you, you chief?
Fine, thank you.
Well, I'm Daoud Andre. I'm an activist in the Haitian community in New York. I do a radio program in the Haitian community and also a member of COMOCODA. That's the Committee to Mobilize Against Dictatorship in Haiti. And our group is the organization in the Haitian community that's been mobilizing. This month is 2 years since we've been protesting basically everywhere we can find the Clintons, at Bill's Harlem office, at the foundation, and the headquarters, everywhere, just to let people know of the crimes of the Clinton family in Haiti. So I have to start by saying thank you to Utrice and Lead Stories, as I don't even say one of the few programs, because I don't know another one, even in the Haitian community, that keeps this issue alive, as much airtime that is devoted to the Clintons and Haiti, the Clinton relationship to Haiti. Now, I think that I have to just, in the beginning, just say this. At COMOCODA, our position has always been, you know, if it's a dog running against Hillary Clinton, we tell our community to vote for the dog. Because in this situation, our primary objective is to stop these people from being able to get back to the White House and do, at a whole other scale, this kind of criminal activity that they have been doing. You know, it's like the first time, the first 8 years there, they were learning the ropes, kind of, you know? And right now, this machine that they have, and it's a machine that basically controls everything. And when we look at it, at the convention in Philadelphia, and recently we've been giving out these flyers that say, what's propping up this dead horse? And it shows Obama, the DNC, the media, Wall Street. But it's amazing the things that, and, you know, we kind of, and I'm sure many other people around the world who are looking at the United States today, and they are laughing. They are saying, is this, you know, the epitome of justice or human rights? You know, how does the United States, with a straight face, come to our country and try to teach us about democracy, about elections, about human rights? And the Clinton Foundation, you know, I don't know how much of this, I know that the listeners of this program are so much more informed about the crimes of this syndicate, this mafia. But the question we are asking is, how come, you know, the people here are allowing their government to let this happen? We have, last week we were in front of, what's his name, Schneiderman's office.
That's the New York State Attorney General.
The Attorney General of New York State. And we were protesting. We were saying, you know, if you're looking for thieves, you cannot, you know, be going after the Trump Foundation. You know, of course, they probably, you know, not remove the probably, they stole millions, you know, a couple of millions. But their budget, it's billions that are missing at the Clinton Foundation. And how do you, with a straight face, you know, do this? And the people practically accept it. Now, we didn't pick candidates in this, you know, we call it garbage, you know. We are not responsible for that. And we tell people that we would love to tell them to vote for Jill Stein, vote Monica Moed, vote, you know, one of these left-leaning candidates who, you know, are saying things that are more in line. But the fact is, they cannot stop Hillary Clinton from getting there. And we're saying, as odious as Trump is, as racist as Trump is, and we have for years protested with December 12 other organizations in front of Trump Plaza, his buildings in New York, but he's like a loud dog barking, you know, talking nonsense, while this criminal Clinton syndicate, they have the blood of millions of people around the world on their hands, not just in Haiti. And I know there are other listeners trying to get in, but I wanted to get that in to thank you for your work and to tell people, like, what's going to stop her in this election?
Well, before you go, I want to ask you a question, which is in the context of what we've been discussing. You and the group Komokoda, which has been lobbying essentially in behalf of Haitians. I mean, you guys have jobs, you have family responsibilities, you're not rich at all. It's not like you have a big fat bank account.
And you okay?
But this is what you do, and you don't have a big political party backing you. You don't have any of that. All you have is a conviction that you must stand up for Haiti, and the you must stand up against the forces that are just ruining and have been ruining Haiti for so long. Now, that's politics. You don't have a party. You're talking now, even saying, look, if a dog is running against Hillary Clinton, elect a dog. What I want you to do is to just kind of explain the rationale for the development here, that in your mind, in the mind of the others who have been, and I know you've been protesting out in the street, come rain or come shine, you've been there and the group has been there. How do you explain that this is, in fact, what politics should involve, what people should be able to do, and this is your own way, you've worked it out, you and the others, this is how you flex your political muscle?
What we believe, Utrice, is that we have a lot of power. We always say that we take this energy, this spirit, this thing from our ancestors. Because when you look at the history of Haiti, you know, this is like a bunch of enslaved Africans. You know, we don't like slaves, but people who are in chains and who are looking, there's slavery all around them. And they just made the decision that their children will not ever see this thing called slavery. And, you know, when they started to fight, I'm sure people laughed at them, you know? They said, you're ridiculous. This is Napoleon, you know? Mm-hmm. And they fought. You know, they fought. They fought with, we say, with their nails, because they don't even have, like, a little knife, with their soul, with their spirit. And, of course, you know, the world knows right now that they won. They defeated the Spanish army. They defeated the British army. They defeated the French army. And we've lived through this isolation, to this denigration, till today. Haiti is maligned. I mean, there's a hurricane last week there, and when people are saying that, you know, in one place, one person dies, and in Haiti, like, they're saying 1,300. We don't know how many people died. This is the consequence of the suffering that these slave powers, these colonial, that they've put on Haiti for doing this. So we know that there's a consequence for standing up, for saying no. And we're telling people today that, you know, you don't have to take this. And this is why we go to the street. We don't go to offices to speak to people. We don't lobby. You know, the media, I mean, even progressive media ignore us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so not even to talk about the mainstream media. But what we want people to understand is that they have power. The machine is able to turn. The wheels are able to turn because we allow it to turn. Once if we collectively, you know, decide, and it's never going to be everybody. What we say to people, the enslaved Africans who fought in Haiti, it was not everyone. It was not the majority of them even, because we understand people are scared. People, like, until they see that they're going to win, they can win, they're not going to put their hands in the water. But the message we want to tell people is, if you see it's an injustice, like right now, this election thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ridiculous the way the bias, the way that, you know, and I think, you know, I think that the people, there will be people in this country who will surprise the establishment and do something that people are going to be like, how did this happen? I mean, and it will be like, it happened because you were biased, because you had closed your eyes, because you were shamelessly, like these emails of the woman, you know, the FBI colluding, you know, the Democratic Party stealing the nomination from Bernie Sanders, you know? And all of these people just move forward as if nothing is going on. But we hope that what we do inspires people, and it encourages them to say no, to reject this thing that is being shoved out. And I have to end, because the flyer, it shows a picture of Hillary as a cadaver, you know? And we had to laugh at the thing of her coming out of the 9/11 celebration. And the woman, you know, she's like, it's like a sack of potatoes that they threw her into this van. And still the machine is going on. Still, like, you know, like, forward, like, no matter what. And we're saying, what, maybe even if she dies, they're going to elect a president of this country. So to your audience, I say, take control. Don't accept it. You don't have to.
Thank you so much for contributing that, Dawood. Thank you. Thanks so much. We go to Florida. Ray, you on the air.
Hello, Yatrice.
Hello.
Hello. With so many problems here at home, I think it's important that we tune away from the election noise and look at this escalating situation in Syria. I just read this morning that British aircraft have been authorized to fire on Russian warplanes if they feel threatened, quote-unquote, which leaves for a very subjective interpretation for a pilot that's probably going to be under a lot of stress. This situation is, well, we were able to stop the Syrian war a couple of years ago when there was a huge outcry. And I guess the main thrust of what I want to say is that even though it doesn't work much, that occasionally public outcry still has an effect. And it's just vitally important that people use whatever means they feel is useful to call out the Syrian situation and to prevent Washington from, well, doing what they're doing now, blaming Putin for everything from, you know, bad weather to hacking to mass casualties that are probably being inflicted by us, and hopefully get the situation to de-escalate, because it's really serious. Yesterday, or no, it's a couple of days ago, President Putin said that all Russian school children abroad had to immediately drop their classes and return home, and this morning he's pretty much calling everybody home. And last week he held a drill for, it's an incomprehensible number, for 40 million people to go into shelters. Didn't say what the drill was about, but, you know, clearly he's worried about something big. And we need to cry out.
Well, something big had already happened in Syria. And this is the part that we need to, in our political understanding, we need to remind people that this didn't just happen out of the blue. The United States played a major role in destabilizing. I mean, we hear all the time this polite phrase called regime change. The United States has not stopped its aggression, overt and covert aggression, all over the world. It begins wars. It sides invariably with the wrong people for the wrong reasons. And mm-hmm. then leaves the mess that they create to fester and grow into something even bigger. The whole point is the United States decided that they did not, Assad should not be there. Hillary Clinton, I mean, openly talks about it. The same mentality applied to Muammar Gaddafi. This idea that the United States, I mean, she went to Haiti. We just finished talking about Haiti. She went to Haiti to personally install the president that she wanted to be in charge. A person who had absolutely no previous experience at all in running anything except a band, and he would perform, you know, just baring his butt to the audience and gyrating on stage. She specifically corrupted the electoral process, interfered with it, and installed him. And we can't say she did this on her own. I mean, she was just Secretary of State. She wasn't president. So it means that the Obama administration, the President Obama himself, endorsed this plan. It creates and has created havoc all over the world. Probably it's because when these wars flare up, it is not their sons and daughters who have to go fight. It is somebody else's sons and daughters who will be killed or will come back in a body bag. So they are very, and they tell you publicly how challenging it is to make the decision to go to war. But it is a warring state. This is what we are. Imagine, I don't know if you remember a program I did just explaining the ludicrous rationale that the president had for pursuing ISIS in another person's country. I mean, it is so blatantly against the law that Barack Obama, who is a lawyer, who says with great confidence, oh, we are not going to war with Syria. We're not going to war with Iran. We're not going to war with anybody. We're just pursuing ISIS in another country. This is crazy.
One of the Podesta emails that was released 2 days ago, Hillary is saying flat out that she was going to use Qatari and Saudi help to fund ISIS. And, of course, there's a media blackout on that.
But let me ask you, really, these things that you're talking about, how do you relate to them as a political person? What is the instruction you getting from these events for yourself in terms of what your politics ought to be, or how you should be, how you're orienting yourself with respect to, you know, the large view of what politics is, and therefore what your job is? Your job is to go along.
My job is to get the Stein-Baraka ticket over 5% and hopefully over 10%. That will get attention. We have to displace the current narrative.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Do you think that the Green Party gets it, that it really needs to kind of regather itself and redo its thinking about what it's supposed to be doing and how it's supposed to be doing it, and whether they want to continue just being the party that's just there, rather than being an effective tool to galvanize people into a vibrant movement?
Well, I have a lot to say on that. And there's a little bit of a double standard I see in some of the arguments you've made, where you admired Jesse Jackson for getting 7 million votes, and right now we've got Jill Stein, who's probably got at least seven million votes behind her, and yet, you know, there's not the same level of encouragement. Compared to what she pulled in the last election, which was about 200,000, I mean, that's a big leap. That's a quantum leap. So I don't buy into the argument that that they're on idle.
I admired Jesse Jackson for being very clear that he didn't do this. This is what the people did. Yeah. 7 million people, and then the next time he ran, 11 million people voted for the Rainbow Coalition, although it was clear he was deceiving people. It was clear that was a double agent, and he totally betrayed this movement, and I called him out on it, absolutely at the very time he did it. And I had urged people who had affiliated themselves with the Rainbow Coalition to publicly tear up his contract. Otherwise, you're going to have somebody floating around as some kind of an ambassador with portfolio for a non-existent movement. The same thing is about to happen with Bernie Sanders. I said to people, if you remember on this program, the first order of business is to fire the leader who betrayed you. You have to fire him publicly. You thank him for the work that he did do in representing the aggregate interests of this movement, but it's not his personal possession. And the fact that he went ahead and decided that he's going to lay 13 million votes at the feet and the altar of the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton, well, you got to punish somebody for that. And
it's despicable.
It's long overdue that whatever is left of his movement, simply to maintain the integrity of their effort, they have to and they should publicly cancel his credentials. And leave him on his own. Let him do whatever it is he wants to do. But it should no longer be the case that people get confused that Bernie Sanders is representing a movement. That should be made very clear. But they haven't done it, and it's to their peril. It's going to come back and bite them. Thanks a lot, Ray, for your call. Oh, sorry.
Sure.
Go ahead. Finish up your thought.
No, I'm done, I think.
time. Yes, the point I made with Jesse Jackson is that people, he came along at the right time, and this is one of the things that we always have to watch out for in movements. They calculate that the message will resonate with people who have been cast to the periphery for so long. They're looking for somebody to even recognize that they exist. And they come along. But very often, those who come along, you know, presenting themselves as the answer, they are, in fact, working with the other side. They're treacherous. And they have to be watched, and they have to be vetted very, very carefully, because they can create more calamity than progress. Thank you for your call. Let's talk to Anita from New Jersey. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, thank you, Anita. How are you?
I'm well, thank you for asking. You were asking, what can we do as individuals to navigate or try to change this ridiculousness that we see on now a daily basis?
Well, actually, I'm asking, how are you preparing yourself as a political agent, an agent of change? Do you see, based on what has been unfolding just about every minute of the day now, that the system really is kind of at the point of being irredeemable? You can't trust it. It's not in your interest. It's not working for you. So what are you devising on your own to put together some kind of a political arsenal to help you navigate the system that is coming, and the one that exists now, but the one that will be coming shortly, which will be even worse?
Well, personally, what I'm going to do is, and have started, is I've joined our school, PTO or PTA, whatever they have different names for it. But I think we have to start at the local level. I think we need to start with families. Families that have your common interests, but also those that don't. And really start talking to each other and really pulling apart the issues that are significant to all of us. And if we can do that, then we can go forward with one set of ideas and then go political, find one person that is on the same page as us, and we start locally. You start at your school board, you start at your assemblyman, you start at your they have all kinds of different political positions in your local government. One's, I don't even know what an alderman is. Like, what does an alderman do, or an elderman, or whatever he is?
Alderman. It's just right. A different name. In some places, they call city council members, and, you know. Alderman is just another name for it.
And that's what we need to do. We need to start locally, and then voting in those people that are on the same page. But we have to start at the very, very bottom. I mean, starting with families, starting at schools, that's a large population that you can hit in just one little meeting. And then it's a ripple effect. You hope it's a ripple effect.
So okay, here's a troublesome question. I agree with you, you have to start somewhere. But let's talk about the reality that we're up against a really horrible moment in political time. What do you think is something that could be done that might have immediate effect? And that effect having to do with instilling in people a realization or recognition that you have political power and it's being misused or misapplied. And it is being misused and misapplied against you. I mean, this is the point. How do we, in immediate situation, is there something that you think could happen that would send a message that we've had enough, we know who you are, we know what you're doing, we don't approve, we don't want we don't want what you're offering, but we have something else going. This was something I talked about as a possibility of having shadow governments. Mm-hmm. But what are your thoughts? What could be done almost in the immediate future, right now, to get something going, because you wanted to capitalize on the whole election process? You know, you want that, you want to build on that and use it as a springboard into offering an alternative.
I'm at a loss. I don't know what, because I think Americans, they are not critical thinkers. We just want what we want, and if someone else doesn't have, that's, we're part of the I future, the I now. Everything is I, iPad, iPhone, I this, I that. something catastrophic has to happen, and I don't want to say that, you know,
hello, something catastrophic has happened, is happening.
Well,
that's the whole point.
Well, something. Yeah, this is true, but something catastrophic has to now happen to alter that or to be parallel to that, to draw people away. And I don't know what it is. I mean, I talk to people, and they're okay with voting for Clinton. They're like, well, there's nothing else I can do, even though you talk to your blue in the face. If everyone I spoke to voted for Jill Stein, that says she'll never win because no one will vote for her, she can win. People know about her. They're just not going to vote for her. Why? Because she doesn't have a faith in this ridiculousness, which is why you would want to vote for her, because she's not in this nonsense. But something really bad has to happen, I'm sorry to say, in order to draw people away from the circus.
Could you tell us in what ways you consciously know that your politics and your political orientation has changed in, say, the recent years? From what to what?
I think it's changed from being not involved to being very involved, because now I have a greater interest in what happens to my community, my family, but also my community. I want to be in a community that thrives and that has bonds with each other, that will help each other. And that's the only way that we're going to survive this circuit, is if we have a community that's bonded. I think that's what's changed.
Do you see, did you make any progress, or is any progress being made in this alternative that you're working on?
Well, I am I'm in deep Trump territory right now, and it's very hard.
I didn't mean to laugh, but you said deep Trump territory.
Deep Trump territory. I'm up to my hips.
Okay.
But I think just in my conversations and bringing up different subjects, I don't know if it's hitting yet and sticking to the wall, if you will, but at least they're not walking away from me. We are engaging. Mm-hmm. We are talking. So I think that's a positive.
Well, you know, this is the odd thing. You're talking to people who themselves, the Trump people are themselves disgusted with the mm-hmm. with the status quo. And they want something else. They want something different from the Republican Party and the political establishment. And this is the odd thing that could possibly begin an alliance. They don't like the Republican establishment either. And if you are looking at about, you know, perhaps that's why they're listening. They're listening.
Maybe
because
that's why.
They believe themselves to be, and they have been made to believe themselves to be, outcasts. They are political outcasts. So they finally have become the out the outcast that we believe ourselves to be as well. Mm-hmm. They have a different philosophy maybe, but that is a very significant common trait, I would say, at this time, because so many people are turned off. The themes that Trump himself has repeatedly emphasized, the situation is rigged, you know, the elections are rigged, and the leadership is old and bogus, and it's a bunch of people who are the elite. They see themselves as the elite, and they're not paying attention to the common person. These are traits, and these are expressions that many people share, irrespective of which side of the duopoly they happen to fall, or even outside of it. But there is this feeling of political alienation, and I think it is jarring the establishment generally, because they never believed that people could be so disaffected and so dissatisfied with this thing that they tell us that would magically lifts us above all nations on the planet. Why is it that people are so angry? Why are they so alienated? Thank you so much for your call today. That brings us to the end of our program. And there is nothing better than just having people have their say, because this is how we learn from each other all kinds of things. Your personal journeys telling us, which draws on you, of course, you drawing on your own experience. And there's much to learn from these things, and that can be applied in our effort, hopefully our conjoined effort, to do something better than what we have and what we are experiencing, to take us beyond the now, which is really daunting. And we're looking at, again, a really, really daunting future in which we will have to be politically equipped to deal with it. Thanks so much for joining me today. Tomorrow is more talking on Free Your Mind Friday, so you want to get your brain in gear for that. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.